You don't know you can do something until you do it. And that comes from taking a risk. Risk reward.
With my boy, a fellow Englishman, Josh Mooney.
Work out what you're doing and you enjoy on a daily basis and focus on building a career around that. Because if you enjoy it, you'll probably do well at it.
If you're not fired up after a breakup, particularly if you're the one that got dumped or you got cheated on, then there's no hope for you.
Some of the best things have come out of breakups and trauma. If you've used that energy correctly.
If all else fails, just
train.
Get in shape. Like something good.
There's so many good fundamental values about going to the gym.
Do you think life is better in a relationship or when you're single? What's up, guys, and welcome back to First Things Thirst. We have a special guest today, a good friend of mine, Josh Mooney. How you doing?
I'm good. I wouldn't say special, but thank you for having me.
I'd say close.
Close
friend. Yeah, how long have we known each other for? I was thinking about this the other day. Is it like 14 years?
Yeah, it's about 14 years. University.
Yeah.
I remember being at university and hearing about you because you were at Newcastle and I was at Northumbria and my friends were like, you need to see this guy, Mike Thurston. And I was like, who is this man? Because I was like the fitness guy in my realm. And then it was your realm. You were at Castle Leeds, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're like, this guy's tanned, eats burgers, eats shit, and he's ripped. I was like, I need to see this man.
Some competition.
Oh, united at top, didn't we?
Yeah. Was that the first time we actually encountered each other? Because I think I'd seen you before on Facebook. Because it was only Facebook back then.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I saw what you were doing, like doing the topless stuff at Tup Tup, and I was like, I want to do that shit. So I think, I don't know how I managed to sort out, but I got it sorted out.
Michael Charlton, probably.
Yeah, but it was certainly a memorable first night doing that job.
I don't remember, there's so many. I just remember over the period of time, because it got to a point where I loved it so much. It was £40 a night, wasn't it, or something like that?
Yeah.
But free drinks.
Yeah.
And it was Thursday, Love Though. And then it was Friday, DLS. And it was Saturday, Kinky Disco. And I remember the doorman telling me, he's like, you just keep shrinking every week. Every time I see you, you're getting smaller and weedier. I was like, I need to stop this job.
Did they only do that in Newcastle? I can't remember. But back in the day, for those people who don't know, Newcastle had, I think at the this was before Coos Days, they had topless hosts at the time, was like one of the coolest places, wasn't it? Tup Tup.
Yeah.
And it was like, a handful of guys and like some of the hottest girls in Newcastle that were these hosts, and it was a pretty sick, even you can't really call it a job, but it was pretty cool for what it was. You got a lot of attention,
but like you thought you were the fucking man.
Yeah.
And you were every other guy's enemy in the club as well. Like you just wanted, everyone wanted to punch you.
Yeah, I think that's why when I first did it, I got my top off, got like the tup-tup thing sprayed
stencil.
On. I felt so awkward.
Oh, yeah.
Like I was like, because the first time I'd ever done anything like this before, I'd never been on camera, never done photo shoots or anything. And then here I was walking around a club, topless, not knowing anyone, like barely knew you guys. So I was like, right.
Kind of gay.
I need to have a drink. And then I had another drink and another drink and another drink.
And then boom, Mike's in the room.
Dancing on the bar.
Yeah. Do you know what though? Like if you think about the whole process, you're thrown in the deep end. It's good for character building.
Yeah. You have to learn to not give a fuck. Because for anyone who hasn't been out in Newcastle, Geordies when they're drunk are quite mouthy and they don't give a fuck and they'd like to start fights.
Yeah, for sure. That street. I remember one night when you got in a fight.
Yeah.
And I think because you're so big and ripped, everyone thought you were a massive threat, but you were so drunk. Nothing was working, bro. Nothing was working. And I remember we went down because I've got a flashback and you were outside going down the street away from Tup Tup and I think you just wanted some more.
No.
I don't know what you had in planned when you got back to the club.
I think I can't even remember half that night.
No.
But so, whatever happened, I got banned from the club for a year because I think I started on doorman.
Yeah.
So it was just a disaster, really.
So how long were you doing it for?
So I did that. That was the first taster of it. Then I got banned from Tup Tup. And I didn't do it again for a year until I moved over to Coosdays.
Yeah.
Where I was doing it there, but I was doing it there for like a year. That's how I met Scotty T and all those people. So I did it at Coosday for the majority of third year university. And it was funny because that third year of university was the most important year of university. Like everything counted 75% to the whole degree. And I did not care. All I cared about was going to the gym and looking good for Coosdays when I was working there.
That's what I was going to ask you. Were you actually doing any work?
I was supposed to be, but
that's what I found so difficult. I mean, I was not great at school or anything like that anyway, because I just hate being in a classroom. Mm. And I did nothing at university. Mm. I went and just just went out 5 nights a week. Everything was a numbers game.
Yeah.
I was just, yeah, it was.
What were you studying?
State management.
That's a mad degree.
Right, I went because like you go, it's the right thing to do after school.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I had a gap year. I was like building barns basically on my farm, and then went to university. And I was just like, I picked state management because I lived on a farm. I was like, I'm going to be interested in property, right? Mm. But I didn't have a fucking clue what I was doing. And I guess this is a great example of the system we live in today. You go because you think it's the right thing to do, but you're not aware of anything else to do.
Yeah.
And I went. I did nothing, yeah. Absolutely nothing. 2 years I spent there just going out. That was it. And you know, like looking back in hindsight, yes, I did fuck all work, but I built a big network while I was there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, when I look back at it, especially third year, that was like one of the best years of my life, I think. But
zero.
The same thing, I did that degree because I thought it was a thing to do, like everybody at school. You know, did GCSE, then A level, then went to university. And then I went to university and I was like, well, like, is this it? Like, you're getting taught by all these lecturers who haven't really done much with their life apart from teach. Didn't really make any sense.
You don't question it there, do you? Well, like, they don't own any businesses. They don't, they just teach.
And the whole purpose of me going there was to learn how to run a business.
Yeah.
So it was weird. I scraped a pass, literally. Scraped it, got third.
Did you use it?
Well, I actually got me the job at Hollister.
I did it there you
because
go.
you needed a degree to actually apply for the manager in training position at mm-hmm. Hollister. So that was probably the only time I actually used it. But apart from that,
I think we did exactly the same path, you know, because I went, I went for Hollister, but they turned me. I was so proud of it as well. But I rocked up with my sideburns straightened down and my head to toe in All Saints and whatever stubble I could produce at that time, because all I wanted was a beard. And I went and they're like, no, you need a clean shave. I'm just not the right part. I was gutted.
was that to be like a model? Or
the... Yeah, the like the guys who stand out the front.
Oh, yeah.
Say, hey, man, what's up? Welcome to the pier.
Yeah. You know the maddest thing? Those guys get paid more than me as a manager.
What?
Yeah, because...
Oh, were you doing it for a manager?
Yeah, so I wasn't doing that. Okay. I was like managing the people in the store, but I was an assistant manager, so I wasn't the top manager. I was assistant manager. So every time, I think that's how I met Billy for the first time.
I was going to say that. He's probably worked for you.
Yeah, these guys would rock up. They'd just have to stand outside for a couple of hours, and they would get paid like 150 quid. And I was getting paid like 80 quid or something, 80, 90 quid a day. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense.
Those stores as well, they're so dingy, bro. It's pitch black. It's like the scent they have in there is like hurts your nostrils.
Yeah, bro. I was there for a year and a half. Year and a half of my life in there.
It's like being in captivity for a year and a half.
The only plus I can take from that was it gave me a good understanding of what it was that I didn't want to do. So I knew I don't want to be indoors. I don't want to follow orders. And I want to have the freedom to choose when I work and when I don't work. Because it was like, I had no say in it, especially in retail. Like you have to, Saturday and Sunday, the busiest days. So I never got those days off.
It's so bad. It's the worst.
And then I ended up having to do, they put me on, what the fuck, it was the overnight shift. So my hours first, a couple of months at a time were between 5 p.m. and 2 a.m.
Why? When?
Because I had to oversee the shop floor close and then everything get laid out for the next day. It was weird.
How did you leave?
So I became, I knew that wasn't what I wanted to do. The only thing I wanted to do was go to the gym. And then my housemate just became a personal trainer. So I was like, I'm going to do that. Like, I didn't think I'd be like a coach of any sort. But I was like, as long as I get to be in a gym, I'll be happy. So at the same time, I juggled working this job full time whilst taking a couple of the holiday days and doing this personal training course, like level 2, level 3 certification. So over a 6-week period, but I had to be there between like 8 and 5 during the day. So there were some days when I did the course in a day, and then I'd have to go to work after and then go to the course again.
That's long.
So that was like a very intense period of time, but it was worth it. Good things came from it.
You just did it correctly. I went to Jack Wills and I just went on a lunch break and didn't come back. I just didn't come back. I was like, fuck this. I was lining the hooks had to be like an inch apart when you line the clothes off. And I was like, this is just fucking mind-blowingly boring. I was like, I'm going.
Did you just try and contact you? And
yeah, I was like, I'm just like, no, I'm not doing it. That period of my life, I was like, I didn't really know, I didn't know where I wanted to go, what I was doing. But it's like,
this was after uni.
Yeah. Yeah, I went back to like doing rubbish jobs for a bit. Oh, no, wait, sorry. No, this was before uni. I went to Marbella after uni.
Oh, yeah.
Which one I'm sure we'll get onto. But yeah, that was before uni. That was part of my gap year. But yeah, it wasn't a fun time. Again, it's just like something you know that you don't want to do.
Yeah.
I've never been good for working for anyone.
I think some people just are not made for that. But some people can do it fine, though. And I think some people, like, they see other business owners and entrepreneurs and what they do, and they're like, oh, I want that lifestyle. But if they try to replicate that way of life, you know, some people are just not cut out for it. Like, they to sometimes have to manage a great deal of stress and to have that level of discipline with, you know, making sure that you do the work that's supposed to be done, can be quite difficult. But I've struggled with it in the past. Well, when you have someone telling you, you need to do, these are the things that you need to do and needs to be done by this time. But when you're your own boss, it's kind of like, well, there's no deadline. I can do it at my own time. Like, you have to be quite strict with
then
yourself.
Becomes your own motivation.
Yeah.
I think that was being told what to do. I don't know if that's just like, I'm just not good at being told what to do, but I'm always wanting to go against the grain. Like, I don't know why I've been fired from pretty much every job I've gone into. Like, and then unintentionally, it's like, I think what James Smith said, didn't he? Like, you don't pick your passion. You just do what you do on a daily basis until you get good at it, and then you fall in love with the process, right? And I think that was what fitness was for both of us, right? And then because everything was all on me, you had to make it work.
Yeah.
But when someone's telling me what to do, I'm always resisting naturally. And it was something, I don't know why, I was always like that, but just a bit of an awkward.
So after, did you drop out of uni?
Mm-hmm.
So you dropped out?
Dropped out.
And then?
I got a message from Phil Savage, said, you want to come out to Marbella? And I remember I just broke up with the girl I was seeing, Cara Patterson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out to Cara.
Yeah, shout out to Cara. Probably got that out. The girl I was seeing, Cara. And I was just like, fuck it, I'm going to Marbella. And I remember I was in my Renault Clio and I was driving back home and I was like, this is going to be the best fucking summer ever. And then I literally packed my bags, went out to Marbella. I remember speaking to my mum at the time. She was like, what's your plan? I was like, I haven't got one. Going to Spain, going to do some promoting. Like, it's just like what every mother wants to hear. Do you know what I mean?
I think I remember you. I think your first year was a year before I did it. So I remember watching you post on Facebook and like Phil post on Facebook. And I was like, that looks so sick.
It was so fun.
So when I finished university, I had the choice of going back to Leeds to work at some extremely average job or go work in Marbella for the summer. And I was like, I definitely want to do that. So I reached out to Phil as well. And I did the same thing. I had no plan. I had no accommodation booked. I just packed my bags, said goodbye. And then I remember arriving in Marbella and I was like, fucking hell, I don't have anywhere to stay. So I went and stayed in a hotel and I was like, God, this is expensive. Like, I can't afford to stay in a hotel because I had no money at the time. So I remember I had to, like, one of the guys I was working with, I just stayed on his couch for 2 weeks. And then I moved to someone else's house for 2 weeks and then moved in with Brad Brassington.
Oh, no. He's still there.
Yeah.
I lived with Adam Jones.
Oh, yeah.
You know, his tattoo.
Yeah.
Because his dad had an apartment, which was in Estepona, which was around like a 20-euro taxi away. I was getting paid 50
yeah.
a night. So I was coming home with 10 euros profit, which I would spend on food. So I was working for zero every night for so long.
Yeah. It's the same with me. I mean, thank God we got alcohol free.
Yeah, so much alcohol for free.
Wow.
I remember one night I stayed on the port on a boat and I didn't have any money on me to go home and I had to walk pretty much, which was like a 2-hour walk. It's as close as I could get to where I was living. Then I got a bus.
It's funny. It was we were living the life. But we had no money.
No money. There was no worries either. Like, you just wake up, go to the gym, get a tan, go out.
That was literally it. Like, I had the most basic food as well. I remember I woke up and I have a bowl of cereal. So I didn't know anything about nutrition. Then I'd go to the beach, chill for a bit, go to the gym, which was best part of the day, have one of those, was it wider protein shakes at like 500 calories?
Yeah.
grams of protein.
Glass bottles, yeah.
Had one of them. And then I would eat like some chicken breast, rice and vegetables and then just go to work. And then work was 10 p.m. till like the early hours. Like it was 10 till 3, but then you had to go to the club after.
Yeah. It was 10 till 3 and then 3 till 6. And then you'd wake up and do a day shift.
Yeah.
Do about, no one really counted steps back then, but I'm guaranteed if we did, it'd be like 20, 30 k's worth of steps.
That's why we were so shredded.
That's why I said lean, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that about the food. I remember being at university when we were doing hosting. I used to get these £3 pizzas from the shop and cover it in mayo. And I used to train a lot. And I'm like, why am I not just getting rips? I didn't have a clue what like a calorie was or the macros.
I remember being stuck at like 88 kilograms and I couldn't get heavier. And I didn't understand why. I just wasn't eating enough.
Yeah.
We look good though, considering we didn't know anything though. Just training every day, basically.
Every day. Yeah, it's just stubbornness. What's funny is thinking back now, like that was, at the time we had, at the time we had zero worries.
Yeah.
You just do what you want and life was good. But now people are like 21 and they have so much access to information. So they don't do that because they can go and learn a course and a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy how the generation has changed.
I remember back then we had Blackberries.
Blackberries, yeah.
If we wanted to go on Facebook, I remember I had to go to the internet cafe.
Yeah.
Pay to get access to the internet cafe and just like go on Facebook for a bit.
Sounds so old right now.
And then, yeah, there was no social media, nothing else.
Twitter.
Oh, yeah, there was Twitter at the time.
Twitter was coming out.
There was no, like, all that time, no footage. I think I had like one picture of me at the gym for the whole summer that I was there.
On like a 2-pixel camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Yeah. I'm so glad I did it, though.
Again, if you look at the skill set, what you actually gained through that. I remember first night Phil gave me a bunch of flyers and he was like, bro, go down to the roundabout, you're gonna get girls down to 7. And I was like shaking, come to the club. I couldn't talk. I literally couldn't talk. And then I got into it, got a bit drunk, and it was something so simple but so nerve-wracking to go up to a group of girls and offer them something free to get into. But like, it's the easiest sell in the world, but at the time, it was fucking scary. And to adapt that quickly, I think it's actually a good skill set to have learned throughout life. Like, you can put you in any situation now and could converse with anyone.
Yeah, my people skills developed so much that summer.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. I just got to handle a load of bands. It's like, you've got to get as many people as possible into this. It was like Funky Butter and Opera House or something. Opera Rooms, Opera House.
It got burned down or something.
So yeah, it was It was good. I recommend, like, anybody who doesn't really, probably people who are younger, you probably don't want to be doing that when you're like in your 30s. But like for people who are, they don't really know what they want to do, or they've just come out of university and they're in a bit of a rut, it could be good for them just to relocate and just work abroad doing something.
Yeah, I think
semi-fun.
I think it's good for your character, because what a lot of people, what I found was actually a lot of the people who went to private school, especially the girls who were cooped up, then they went on these seasons just let loose hard. Yeah. And I think if you get that kind of, like, for me, I got a lot out of my system very early. Mm. When it was like just going out, girls, all that kind of thing. So when it got to like later on in life, I wasn't too bothered. So I did want to focus on work. And I remember like Ross Wurzwick, for example, right? He was in a relationship for a long time, and then he was working throughout when we were at university, and then he became single and then went through that.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it's better to get things out of your system earlier on.
Yeah, I've met business people, some guys who have made loads of money, but they work, like, they really have worked their ass off, probably to the point where they've overdone it, they've not had that balance. So they're in a position where they're in the 30s, maybe even approaching late 30s, but they actually haven't done any fun shit. They've just literally been working so hard that now they have like an unlimited amount of money.
It's and more then, dangerous.
And yeah. Then go on that bender, which arguably, I mean, that's going to be probably a lot more damaging for your health the older you get if you're doing that kind of thing.
I mean, there's two sides to it. Like, you can do that and you're older and you've got more money, so you can do more stuff, or you can get it out your system earlier on and you're probably like wasting a few years to your career, but it might be building some good characteristics. Mm. But the problem is if you stay in it,
yeah,
and you do get those people, I'm sure we know a few, who have stayed there and they don't move, yeah, that's when it gets dangerous to you. Yeah. I think.
Well, I remember after doing that season, and then I went back to Newcastle, carried on working in nightlife, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't deal with the people, the work hours. It was just, I just wanted a normal job.
Yeah.
How long were you in it for? You did a few years.
Dude, I went to, like, I left, I was going out with Talith at the time, who, like, cheated on me loads. Loads. Oh, man, she was one that, like, she fucking hurt me quite a lot. Anyway, character building again. And I moved back to Norwich, and that's not where I'm from. Just moved to Norwich because I met a club promoter who's like, come back, we're going to start a night. And I stayed at his apartment, and we like basically shared a room and went to open a night at Mercy nightclub. And I was trying to do that for like a year. It was just awful. And then while I was doing that, I was always going to the gym. So then I got my qualifications as well at the same time. And then the fitness kind of started to come out. Yeah. And then I moved back to Manchester. And that's when I semi-sorted my life out. Started my career path in fitness, I guess. But it was for like a few years after Marbella. I thought I was going to be like Michael Charlton.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds easy to start your own night. It's like, so the thought of it, you think, I could do that. Because you, especially if you have a network, you're like, oh yeah, well, I know enough people, I could fill this bar or club. It's not easy.
It's so difficult, bro. Oh no, yeah, so after Manchester, after Norwich, we went to Manchester, and then me and Ross started to do nights at Bijou. We were like working for the club. It's so difficult, bro, because there's so much competition. It's mainly on footfall, like to promote it was all through Facebook and Twitter.
You've got to be so busy.
Active. Yeah, but like it's in-person busy. Like you have to be out in the daytime speaking to people, going to the shops, and you have to know the right people to sell the tables. See, if the tables are sold, the club's pretty much full anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was an experience. But again, I know some people who are still in that.
Yeah.
There's only certain people who absolutely kill it, like Phil. Like he's killed it. So he owns his own clubs now.
Yeah.
But what would be the end goal? Like, because there's people still doing those nights, and it's just,
yeah, I could not do that. I think you have to be like a super extroverted person who just loves going out. I always thought Louis Armstrong would be perfect for having his own night.
Good content, very social, everyone loves alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you got that out of your system? You just kind of moved away from the
I'd probably say like mid-20s. Mm. When I was in Manchester living with Ross. And then I got asked to go on X on the Beach. So that's what kind of took me out of it, because then I got lots of Twitter followers.
Mm.
And I was like, right, I can use these and try and do my training, because I was kind of going into PTing at the time at a private gym in Manchester. And then if I can leverage that audience. And then that's kind of when online started after that. I didn't start like online when I was like 27.
Mm.
But it was like on a Wix.com platform, PDF, £30. It was basic as fuck. Yeah. Nothing moved for years, bro. But I was, mid-20s, I'd say.
You did quite a bit of the reality TV stuff, didn't you?
Yeah. So I went on X on the Beach with Talitha. Right? Yeah.
Did she get approached or did you get approached?
I got approached, and then I purposely said exes that I thought they might get on there, and I didn't mention her name. And they told me it was going to be called Summer of Love, because it was the very first one. And then I went into a house and I had like 5 exes in there. And it was awful, like anxiety through the roof. Like the first time I've ever walked into a house, you've got like a Big Brother camera, you've got a camera in front of you, you've got a mic on, and even if you breathe, someone can hear what you're saying. Like, it was awful experience, but then they feed you alcohol and then drama unfolds.
That's one thing I don't know what it's like. I've never been on a reality TV show.
That's one thing, like, you should pride yourself off. Because I did that because I didn't know where I was in life. I got offered opportunity, terrible money, took it. I was going to be given an audience. And like, you're like, oh, I'm going to be fucking famous. Awesome. But it was the wrong type of audience.
Mm.
And what you built was a long, sustainable, loyal audience. You know, when you go on these shows, even if you look at some of my following now, it's from all over the place. America's massive in my audience because of the challenge. And then, but obviously fitness has built that as well. But yours is purely loyal towards your YouTube, right?
Mm.
So you should pride yourself on not doing that. Because at the time, when you know, I didn't have anything going on. I was like, fuck it.
Yeah.
What have I got to lose? I don't work for anyone. I'm my own boss. I'm doing training in the gym. Why not? And I can leverage that audience, right? But back then, there was no demographics. There was no, like, you didn't know what audience. You just had numbers.
Yeah.
It was just Twitter, Facebook. So little did I know, half the people who were following me were like teenagers from like everywhere. Do you know what I mean? So although the numbers were there, it wasn't that useful at the time.
It's a weird one because I thought about it, but I think when I was getting asked, this was when Love Island was peaking, I think. Yeah. And I think I'd already gone too far with my YouTube that I didn't need it. It wasn't going to do me any favors. But I feel like if you strategically pick the right one, and it just turns out to be like the most viewed season ever, like you can build a career off that. Like there's some people who, when Love Island was big back in the day, like some of those girls are still. I mean, they made a lot of money. They made careers out of it. They launched their own products. Same thing with Geordie Shore. Like some of the guys, like Gaz,
he came to Marbella to see me once, and he was like, "Well, I had 52 PAs back to back, all like at $3,000 to $4,000." Yeah. And he was like, "It's like 52 nights out in a row." I was like, "Nice."
Yeah,
sounds like hell, but like they're looking back now. But that those people, there's only a handful, literally. Yeah. Probably like under 10 that have done significantly well off that, you know.
Yeah.
And what I've said was, when I always went back to my bread and butter, which was fitness, right? A lot of these people, when they go on these shows, they think they've made it and they don't have the balls to go back to whatever they were doing before.
Yeah.
And then what this builds is, because you get a lot of stuff for free, as you know, like they don't appreciate any sort of hard work. Mm. So then they expect stuff for free, and then there's no delayed gratification with any work that they do.
Yeah.
So once that hype has fallen off, they flop, like the majority of all these people.
Their head, they get depressed.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, a lot happened around that as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then you've got to deal with all the hate of it as well. Yeah. It builds thick skin, again. I had some awful things said to me, bro. Awful. I just don't understand it. I don't really care. You just brush it off. You've got to, like, sympathize with where it's coming from. Someone in the back end of fucking Texas, like
where was it being sent to, like socials?
The challenge, an American show, Georgia Harrison, I kicked her off the show because it was a challenge. Yeah. Like, it's an elimination process. It fucking happens, right? But these people in America are so bought into the show. They're like, oh, you made the wrong choice, bro. I hope your mom dies of cancer and all this stuff. Like, send me this shit. I'm like, what the fuck, man? I was like, have you heard what you're saying? Like, a lot of stuff in the DM at that point. I remember showing my mom and she just laughed. Yeah. She's like, you got to like sympathize with these people. Yeah, but it's a TV show. Yeah. But again, it just shows like where people are in their life, where they're so into a show that they feel the need to go search me up and like DM me.
It was fucking mental.
It's fucking nuts, bro.
I remember there's a guy who used to coach at my gym when I had my gym back in the day, Adam Collard.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was like, he was quite young at the time. And then he ended up going on Love Island. And I think his following, like, it blew up from, like, literally 14,000 to, like, 1.1 million mm-hmm. on Instagram. But then he realized that he couldn't really do anything with it because he showed me the analytics and it was, like, 85% women.
Yeah.
And these were all, like, young women. So he was into his fitness as well and he wanted to sell, like, training programs or just... to sell something that he would like wear or use or do, and he couldn't do it because he had no guys that were following him, so he had to start doing like female glute workouts.
I was gonna say he should have just done like a booty builder, like ebook or something. He went back on it, didn't he?
It was funny, like some of our mates, like Rob Litz has been on it, Chris Williamson's been on it.
I forgot about Rob, and Chris. They've just outgrown it though because it's so long ago.
But the problem is that if you do too well, you're associated with it for life.
You're like Stifler from American Pie. Yeah. You can't shake the roll off.
It's bad. But I mean, did anything positive come from that? From the experience of doing reality TV? Like, did it help you be better in front of a camera?
Not particularly on the challenge. I did a lot off the back of it. I traveled all over America. I got some pretty cool opportunities, built my network, but...
That helped grow your socials.
Massively helped me grow my socials. do you know, I can't knock it because it's put me where it's a part of my journey where I am today. But like, if I could rewrite history, I probably wouldn't do it. But then again, it was a stepping stone. It just accelerated my growth in some form, right? Mm-hmm. And then once I had a product, I was just selling it on there. But it's obviously helped me.
What would you say to guys in their 20s or girls in their 20s who are thinking about doing it?
I think you have a lot more information than I had nowadays. You have a lot more opportunities to grow something a lot more sustainable and to get you a lot more, you know, revenue essentially. I don't know, it's when you're younger, I guess you kind of want to be famous. I kind of wanted to be well known. That was my thing. But now if I could just do what I'm doing and delete all my socials, I'd love to do that. But I think people going into their 20s, lads listening now, I would just work out what you're doing, you enjoy on a daily basis, and focus on building a career around that. Because if you enjoy it, you'll probably do well at it.
Yeah.
Don't look at TV programs.
And I think the thing is now as well, like if your goal was like, I want to be known, I want to be famous, you can do that yourself. Like there's platforms out there that will allow you to do it. There's equipment, there's camera guys out there that will help you to be a somebody. You need to figure out what type of content you're going to create.
Well, essentially, you've made your own TV show.
Yeah.
That's what it is. But you've done that for the right reasons. I essentially did it for the wrong reasons. But it's only because I didn't have direction. I didn't have a long-term goal with that. And I didn't have any other momentum elsewhere. You know? Like, in reality, I didn't really sort my life out until, like, late 20s, bro. Because of the lack of information and direction that I had, because I was fucking around. I was in Marbella doing TV shows, you know. But again, everything led back to what I was doing the whole entire time, which was going to the gym to get jacked.
If all else fails, just
train,
get in shape. Like, something good's gonna come.
There's so many good fundamental values about going to the gym.
Yeah.
It's the relationships you build in the gym, people who are going are usually going to be quite successful. You build discipline, delayed gratification, and
confidence.
Confidence. There's no downside to it.
Real quick, guys, I just want to share with you something which I spent the end of 2023 putting together for you. You see, in life, if you are unhappy with something, you need to change it. That is one of the core philosophies that has driven me, my businesses, and my fitness over the past 10 years. In recent years, I've been asked frequently how I've managed to go from being an average personal trainer, working all day, every day in a gym in the north of England, to the position that I am in today. That is why I decided to create the Digital Playbook. This is a step-by-step blueprint for anybody who finds themselves in the same position that I did years ago, wondering to myself, how can I make money online? Can I really make a full-time income from creating content about the things that I actually like? How can I travel the world, work from my laptop, and at the same time still afford to live a great lifestyle? It's essentially a playbook on how I built multi-million pound businesses off the back of creating content online. If you want to check it out, head over to thedigitalplaybook.net and you can book in a call with my team to find out more. Let's get back to the episode. Turn a bad day into a good day. If you're in a mood, it'll sort you out.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, for sure, like, my YouTube channel would not have done as well as it has done if I wasn't in shape. And it's opened up so many different conversations. Like, even, like, I could just be walking on the beach or, like, at a pool or whatever, and then people would just start talking to me. I'd get some negativity, of course.
I'm looking at your eyes.
Fucking roids, mate.
No, of course, conversations are jacked up. And it helps when you walk in a room. You know, everyone says that when you walk in a room and like
there's a fine line though. You don't want to be too jacked, because if you're too jacked, people will just laugh at you. But if you're if you're like athletic, if you've got the abs, like,
did you compete?
Yeah, twice. 2014-15.
That's a concept that I've never really got my head around. Yeah, because you're into it, but like, what do you win? Like, unless you're one of the big dogs, right? You could have probably done that.
Yeah, I think if I dedicated my life to it, I could have done.
But it's like Phil Heath said, it's the hardest sport, and he's played all kinds of sports. Yeah. Like the, and you probably would have gone down like a bit of a dark route if you got fully into it as well.
Oh yeah, I would have been geared up to the absolute gills. Yeah. I look great though.
Oh yeah, you look so big, bro. Freaky. You'd have been that guy wearing those like big ankle shoes in the gym and wearing shorts all year round because your calves are so big.
That guy. I'd be curious to see like what I could have looked like if I really took, like, imagine you're like, you fully dedicate your life to being as jacked and aesthetic as possible. Like every meal is on point. Training sessions, you got like some like Dorian Yates like coaching you for every session.
It's like Mike O'Hearn,
don't drink,
like that.
Don't do anything like that. Like you'd look freaky, but then there's no guarantee that it's going to pay off. I mean, we're thinking back to like when I actually did compete when I was 24, 25. So social media wasn't what it is today. So when you actually compete, like I did, you literally get nothing. Like I think I got
a ton of protein.
When I did it, Justin St. Paul came first in the WBFF. Some other jacked guy came second, I came third. So like, oh, that was pretty cool. So maybe I'll do it again because this time I might come second or first. And then I remember within a year, everybody got fucking huge. So there was a fitness model, muscle model. I was like in between because I was bigger than a fitness model, but I wasn't like a jacked up muscle model. So I was like, right, I'll do muscle model again. Anyway, the show must have got more exposure. And I stood as like surrounded by these guys who were like 10, 20 kilograms heavier than me. And I was just like, what the hell? Like, I don't have a chance. And it was weird because I'd worked my ass off for it. And I was just like, this is the last time I'm going to do this.
You say that though, but like, this is what is crazy about bodybuilding. No matter how much work you do, once you get to that sub 5% of that level, it comes down to genetics.
Yeah.
You know, symmetry, all that kind of stuff. You can work your ass off, but if you're not symmetrical,
your abs are not like on point, or you're not like a wide waist.
So like, it's just it's Kenny's building up for like, unless you do win, there's a very small chance of you winning.
Mm.
Setting yourself up for failure in most senses. And the work behind it is nuts.
I know some people who just compete every year and they never win. And I'm like,
but it's the lifestyle as well. Like, don't get me wrong. I respect anyone who has dedication to their craft. When you ask someone, are you enjoying your life? Are you actually? Do you know what I mean? Like, going through that week and week, like, it's not like an easy thing. Like, it's a 12-week bulk and a 12-week prep, isn't it? It's like, it's nuts. Are you able to socialize? Are you able to go out for dinners? Do you know what I mean? That's because people ask me, why didn't I compete? And that was the reason why. You know me, I love beer.
Yeah, I
love going for a drink, right? But I love socializing. Mm. It's not even specifically about the beer or the alcohol. I love to be in the environments where I can speak to people and go out.
It was so weird because when I did it, you start hating the people that are having fun.
Yeah.
So people who are like eating at restaurants or like going out and drinking, you just like...
It brings a different type of person out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm better than them.
Feeling your abs as you're like looking at...
But what I liked was the experience, and I think I truly understood what it was to be hungry. I mean, obviously, I can't compare myself to people who are genuinely starving in the world. But that was the closest I've been to being like, I'm really, really, really hungry, and I can't do anything about it. I just have to go to bed. I was like going to bed early, so that I could just not have to deal with hunger. But I took it to the extreme, though. I think like it was the first show, 2 weeks out, I was like 2,000 calories, doing an hour of cardio every day and doing the training on top of that. I was just like, I love going to the gym, but I hated everything to do with the gym at that point in time. Then you have the horrible relationship with food afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't stop eating. Even though you're like, I look amazing. This is the best I've ever looked in my life. Let's try and stay like this for as long as possible. It just doesn't happen. Most people who have competed, they when they're on stage, they look amazing. They're like, fuck, like, I want to stay like this. But they can't because they can't control what they eat afterwards.
What do you think you could happily stay at all year round? You're sub 10.
What?
Percentage-wise, body fat.
Yeah, not now, but I think I've noticed when I get really lean throughout the year, surprisingly, happens when I'm in Ibiza. Because the food intake is quite low.
Step counts.
Step count is on a mad one, like probably talking like 20, at least 20K. And I'm just, I'm not even thinking about eating. So I, like at that point in time, there's definitely a happy medium, but that level of body fat is maintained by being so active, by walking. Like you have to just walk loads. And then you have to constantly be so occupied with life, stimulation, things going on, that you don't really have time to think about food. Because the majority of the time when you eat is because you're probably bored.
Yeah.
The majority of the time when I'm eating, it's just like, usually in the evening, either like, say for example, you're in a relationship, you just eat. But whenever you've got things going on and you're active, places to go, people to meet, you don't really think about food as much. Like even when I was in Japan, like I was just now, I was eating whatever I wanted to eat, but I was still training, not as often as usual, but we were doing like 15, 20,000 steps every single day. And then within like 10, 11 days, I was like, how have I got leaner during this trip? I'm eating quite a lot and I'm eating whatever I want. But I'm constantly walking around.
Neat. Yeah, bro. That's another thing. Like, you didn't know any of that stuff when we were younger. You know, you think what a lot of people do think now when they just start in the gym is that hour is where they lose all their body fat and make all their gains.
Yeah.
But it's all the movement you do outside of that.
Yeah.
That's how you stay ripped. And that's what Ibiza's good for.
But I noticed that it's much harder for me to do that here in Dubai. I don't walk here. I have to force myself to walk.
You're in the best place to walk. Because you've got this, but
like when I'm comparing it to when I,
you don't have it, when you when go away.
In a European city, like you can walk everywhere. Like it might take you a while, but you can walk from one side of the city to the other side of the city because it's all connected. But in Dubai, you can't do that. It's like you have your areas in Dubai that you can walk around, But it's like, I can't walk to the Palm from here. I can't walk to downtown from here.
This is also home for you though, bro.
Yeah.
You've seen it. Yeah. So if you're going to places, you're going to walk everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it's natural.
Yeah.
So the answer is to travel more.
Yes. That is the thing.
I love traveling, bro.
Where have you... Oh, you just got back from skiing.
Skiing. It's near Courchevel. I can't pronounce it. Dehaize or something in the Alps.
And that was official Tomorrowland in the Alps.
Tomorrowland in the Alps, bro.
Yeah.
It was wild. I ate a lot of pizza.
Yeah. I did the one in just before COVID in 2019, like the official one.
I remember that.
That vlog, that went off, that vlog.
Yeah.
That was good.
The effort that they put into those things is insane.
Yeah.
It's absolutely mad. And the efficient, like, you think you'd be waiting. Like, it's very, there's good flow to the whole thing. But, like, I tell you what, being on a mountain...
Yeah,
and there's a rave going on. Like Steve Aoki is just dropping bombs. Like it's an amazing experience. And then trying to ski down afterwards is always fun.
But that's the thing now. Like we've seen our fair share of parties, and we got older. So don't you feel like now it's the standard is high for when you're out. You're like you're always comparing it to like the best parties that you've been to.
Mm-hmm.
So now whenever if I am going to party and have a big night, like it has to be something special or something where I'd be like, oh no, yeah, like this is sick. Like let's
so party. True. I actually, even when I was there, we were at a place. I get bored very easily when I'm out, which makes me probably like consume more alcohol. Cause I'm like, what else am I going to fucking do? Like I'm here. So I didn't even think of it that way, but yeah, we've probably been to some of the best parties on the planet at some point. So if it is boring, you just have to get fucked up. No, honestly though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's what it is. It's not a blessing and a curse.
Are you, in general, if you say you've cut it down quite a bit from...
Since moving here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've only just recently, last like 8-9 months been in a relationship. But before that, I was living in Marbella for the last year. All our friends are there. It's very easy to go out. Being single there and having the access to the things we have access to, and all alcohol is pretty much free. I was going out a lot more than I should. But the worst thing is, probably one of the, it's a good and a bad trait, I can function on a hangover very well. And that means I will go out for dinner. I can go out, have a few drinks, and I'll happily go out, wake up, go to the gym, and work all day. So it didn't really affect me negatively too much. I have calmed down a lot.
Yeah. I can't remember when it was, but I remember there was a point where I remember seeing you, there was a transition where you were like, I don't want to be a party boy anymore. Like I want to work. I want to make money. I think that was when you started really going hard with the coaching.
Yeah.
Because at what point for you did your income like really go up?
It's probably start of COVID, bro.
Yeah.
When it started to go up.
Selling masks.
Selling what?
Masks.
Masks? Oh, God, yeah.
Joking.
Oh, no. I've got some friends who did very, very well off that. Find a man, baby. Yeah.
COVID
one
tests.
One of my friends I went to school with, his brother, he like basically moved to, this is Japan or somewhere, lived in basically a shoebox, met the right people at the right time, closed like a $9 million deal in one because it was something to do with like the masks and uniforms and all that kind of stuff. Nuts. It was kind of COVID. So like I was working in that gym in Manchester, a private gym, and I was selling ebooks on the side, and it was just terrible. And then it was only because of social media kind of to get momentum slowly but surely. But then once everyone was trapped at home, they're all on their phones. I'm sure it helped you as well. Like business did start to take off then. And then I had my own brand, my JM Transformations thing. Worst name in the world, but everyone uses their initials. Sorry with this way. Everyone uses their name, right? And then that's what started off. And then I got approached by Gareth, who owned Affluence at the time, which is now in my own Macroactive, to have my own platform built for me. And because everyone was at home, everyone had home workouts, I built like a strong community around me. Subconsciously knowing like the power of how important community was, and it grew significantly in that time, and that's I guess like was like the catalyst to me as going into a full-time online coach, I guess.
Yeah.
What was yours?
What?
When did it like kick off for you?
It was when I left the gym. I was full-time PT in person. And it was doing all right. But I mean, it's kind of an upper limit to how much you can charge as a coach in Newcastle, because that's not where the money's at. So I think I was charging like between 30, 40 quid an hour. I had quite a lot of clients. But then it was just like, fuck, how do you scale this? Like I'm working all day, every day in this gym. Like came home. I'd like had enough energy to prep my meal for the next day. And I just went straight to bed. I remember I never had any problems sleeping when I was a PT because I was so exhausted. And you have to be like super verbal and engaged like for every client. So doing that for 2 years. And then I decided to just like walk away from the gym, business partner, Newcastle, everything. I went to London, moved into this apartment, which I couldn't afford it at the time. I had to get my dad to sign as a guarantor because the landlord was like, well, you don't really have any proof that you make any money. I was like, I need this apartment because I want to film in somewhere that looks the white apartment, the white sofa.
You had a really cool balcony, and I was like, oh, Mike's fucking killing it. I was like, love that.
I think it was that was like a grand and a half a month, but it wasn't. It was Kingston. It wasn't central London.
Yeah,
it was a nice apartment though. Like, it was certainly an upgrade. That was the first time I'd ever lived alone, so. That was a weird experience because I moved to London, didn't know anyone in London, but I lived alone. I had no distractions. I was like, well, I need to make money because otherwise I won't be able to afford to live here. And I was like, what can I do quick? I can exchange my services, online coaching, make programs. Okay, how do I get demand for that? I need to have a presence online. I had a presence on Instagram, but I always had trouble trying to convert people on Instagram because people... they would see like pictures of a jacked guy, but no one ever really saw me talk. So that's when I was like, well, let's just, I'd had a YouTube channel for 6 months and I just went all in on it. So for that year, 2017, I just two videos a week at least, filmed and edited everything myself. And then very quickly, like it grew a lot of eyeballs on my content. I was just driving all those people to my website. So then very quickly I started making a lot of money.
Did you know the impact that it was going to have, you just doing it?
Yeah. I was doing it because I initially started doing it because I was just fed up with people asking me the same questions over again. Like, what? Just like, what's the best exercise to do this? Or how do you lose body fat? Or like, how do you get, like, yeah. I was like, let me just make a video on it. So every time I get asked it, I'll just be like, just watch this video.
Yeah.
And then I think I was one of them that really took off and it got like 100,000 views. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe there's something that I can do with this. So I just fucking went all in. But it was good though. The timing was good. Because if I tried to do that now, or if somebody tried to do that same thing now, like the quality of the content that is going out at the moment is like, it's seriously high.
And
like
volume.
The production quality and just the amount of effort people are putting into videos. Like, it was quite easy for me back in the day. It was like, just put a camera on a tripod and talk.
Mm.
But I don't think, some people have done it before, but I think my skill was just breaking it down as simply as possible for the average Joe to understand. And they were like, oh, I never thought about it like that.
I think to compete nowadays, you've got to, there's so much to do. I don't remember you mentioned it before. And you've got like, you've got your podcast, you've got Instagram, you've got Facebook, you've got TikTok, X, all these things, and you have to do them all to stand out in a crowd now. You know, like, look at Hormozy, the volume of stuff that he does and the growth, and Chris is fucking killing it. But back then it was just a camera.
Yeah.
And yeah, you did it at the right time. Probably, it's probably the best investment you've ever done.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
But what was cool is you probably didn't have a fucking clue what it was leading to right now.
No, that's
the best thing about hindsight now. Like, you can probably remember those first few videos, you're just doing them for the sake of it because people are asking you questions, which is pretty cool.
And like, my biggest regret is that I could have started 2 years earlier. Like, I could have documented when I was competing. It just would have sped the whole process up. Like, I could have made a lot of money earlier on in my life. but I just didn't see the potential. It wasn't a thing.
You didn't know how, though.
Yeah. Like, it didn't. People weren't making that amount of money through social media and coaching, online coaching. It wasn't really a thing.
I didn't understand the whole, like, you just did things for the sake of things. Like, I'd post and not know what to do off the back of it. Like, to get the eyeballs, then to give a call to action, and then, you know, drive them towards, like, a product. Mm. I didn't have a clue what if that was back then, because you weren't aware of it. I didn't get taught it.
Well, the psychology behind why people buy things.
Yeah.
Never understood that.
Do you know what I would love to see? Ziz or Greg Plitt to see where they would be today.
Yeah.
RIP to both of them, legends in the game. Ziz, if he was still alive, he would be the most famous person on the planet. Yeah. Like, he'd be top Andrew Tate.
He's not trying to be anybody else. He's not trying to copy anybody else. He was setting the trend.
Yeah.
And he was one
that's... He was very deluded about what he was talking about. Yeah. He had an alter ego. Well, Ziz. Ziz, bruh. He danced in his room on his webcam. The best videos.
There's so many people that, like, literally worshipped him.
Yeah. Fuck. His brother made a legacy off him.
Do you have anyone you were, like, inspired by?
Greg Plitt, bro. Yeah. I remember I was walking out of a girl's apartment in Newcastle, and I literally stopped in my steps. I heard it, and I was like, I got sad. I really sad for a second because I used to watch all his videos. I still sometimes put him on YouTube. Mm. Like, he's awesome. He was the guy for me.
Yeah.
Fucking loved that guy. And he tried to outrun a train.
That's a mad way to go.
Mad way to go. Bro.
I think there was. I remember for me. I think I remember being on my computer. This was when I was working at Hollister, and this is when you remember. Lazar Angelov, when he starts to come on the scene, I was like, that is one of the sickest physiques I've ever seen. Bro. And he blew up quick on social media and Instagram, but then he fucked himself up a few times. And then he didn't speak very English, so when it came when it came to actually speaking, that didn't really help him out.
He had one of the best physiques on the planet.
Yeah, in his prime.
He got injured, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's just posting throwbacks.
Yeah, yeah. There was a period where it was just like, what the hell? It was crazy.
Dude, though.
That, and I think the first time I saw Simeon Panda, I was like, what the fuck?
So I used to go to the same gym as him in Metroflex in London. Yeah. Never saw the guy. The guy's got a 28-inch waist, bro.
Yeah.
And shoulders, like, he's a genetic freak, man. Like, hats off to him.
Yeah, there's a few people that I see them in real life, and I'm like, that's impressive. And when I saw him in real life, I was like, fuck, he looks good in person as well.
His limbs, he's so long and big. It doesn't make sense how he's built.
You've got super long arms, and then it's that narrow waist. Like, if you have a narrow waist, like, that can really set you apart from everybody else.
It can make your physique broken. Everyone wants that V taper. Yeah. And people can fight and fight and fight to get it and build your lats out as much as you want and your shoulders. But
I think I've got a pretty chunky waist.
You don't?
I feel like I do.
What is it? 32?
Yeah, but I think it's just...
That's just tiny.
I want a small, goddammit.
What? Get a waist trainer on.
Yeah.
Be that guy.
When did you start Elevate?
Elevate agency started only like 2 and a bit years ago.
Yeah.
But it was after the working with Affluencer. I worked with them for like 8 months. I got to like 25K a month, and I was really, really happy. I had no worries because everything's taken care of with them, as you know. And I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder, but I was doing really well. And then I had a conversation with Jamie. He's like, we're doing high ticket. And I didn't have a clue what high ticket was. I just thought there was a price. It's weird. Like, I didn't even think you could charge more, or you didn't know you could charge that price. Mm. And he told me he was charging 1,600 for clients, and he was doing it with his brothers. And he was like, do you want to fancy it? Do you want to fancy trying it? And I was like, yeah, we can, if you want. And I did it, and I did like 98K my first month. But now I know why, because I have built a massive community and I haven't offered a high ticket product to them as well. So again, like, you know, the importance of personal branding, and then delivering a product and it'll fly, obviously. So that's why my first month was so good. And then we did it all together as a group with his brothers, and we like did over 7 figures in like just under a year collectively. Like just high ticket. And that one's life was amazing because like there was minimal staff and it was just us. And we spent a lot of money. But then we realized we've got to do something here. And then that's when Ken from Macroactive came to meet me in Dubai. And he was like, why have you stepped away from your platform? Because at that point, I had like consistent low ticket income in, and I was doing high ticket. So I was getting double revenue, essentially. And he was like, right, we need to do something here. You guys do high ticket. We do low ticket. Let's do something together. Mm. And that's when Elevate was born, essentially. So we went into partnership with them, reseller of their software, and then we coach people to do both, depending on both or either or, depending on their demographic, their audience, and where they're at, basically.
Mm.
And then that's how we were born. But that was like 2 years ago, and we've probably helped over over 1,000 coaches since then.
We helped me out for a bit.
Yeah, we did for a little bit. Yeah, yeah.
It was good. It was
light work for you, bro. It was so easy. Still, like, even Rob came back onto a high ticket recently, and it's just like, if you know what to do and you've got a good brand around you, it's a no-brainer.
Because there's a lot of people on my app, but when people pay so little for something, they don't take it seriously. It's almost like the more money you pay, the more effort and work you're going to put into it.
And they want more from you as well, which is why it's so important to have a service that it can be fully automated. It's very important when you've got such a large audience to have different offers for people as well, because otherwise you're just leaving so much on the table, you know. So it's, and that's what I think a lot of people get wrong, because when we have to do outreach to coaches, and then I know how it feels to be approached, because Jamie approached me and I had a chip on my shoulder because I thought I was doing really well at the time. And therefore, a lot of people aren't open to conversations to try and help them to further in their career just by putting another offer into their business to help them. So I think awareness needs to be made around that. And that's what, I guess, what we give to people, the opportunity to do that.
I think you don't even need a huge following as well. I think a lot of people seem to think, oh, you know, I can't earn that amount of money because I only have 10,000 followers.
Dude, we had a guy called Ollie Wildman, I think he was called. He came through our academy the other day and he had 200 followers, and he grew in 3 weeks to 800 followers. And in those 3 weeks, he did $4,000 USD doing high ticket. So if you've got 4,000 people think you need a lot of followers to do well. If you have 100 people that follow you and you've got a product, which is a couple hundred, $500, whatever it is, for a 12-week package, you can get 5 to 10 out of those 100 on a package if you can sell to them and you're providing value. And that's what a lot of people get mixed up. They think they need lots to do a lot. But if you've got the right offer, it makes a lot more sense if you've got a lower following to do high ticket, because the margins are higher.
I think there's a lot of people as well that think, they just think, and I realize this as well, because when you're not earning a lot of money, it seems absurd that you could be earning like a crazy amount of money, like doing over 10, 20K a month. You just think, there's no way I can do that because I'm working my ass off here for a couple thousand. Like, there's no way that I can just do something like this and work less and then be getting like 10 times the amount of money or something crazy.
I mean, that comes from self-belief, I guess. Like, and you don't know you can do something until you do it. And that comes from taking a risk reward.
Very quickly, guys, I just want to ask you a quick question. Are you taking supplements? And if you are, do you have any idea if you're taking the right supplements in the right amounts? You see, the more that I discovered about the importance of micronutrient supplementation and the adverse health effects of micronutrient deficiencies, I would constantly ask myself the same thing. I would go into supplement stores, load up on bottles of micronutrients and pop pills daily without really knowing if they were doing me any good or not. That's when I decided to try out Bionic. Since 2021, I've been getting my blood work done with them every 3 to 4 months. And once the blood test has been analyzed, they would put together a customized micronutrient formula tailored specifically for me. And this would last me for 3 to 4 months until I got my blood work done again. And since then, I've honestly never looked back. If you are also serious about performing at your best, preventing development of diseases and maximizing your overall health and well-being, I highly recommend you give it a try. And they've recently introduced Bionic Go, which is a fraction of the price, where all you need to do is just fill in a questionnaire online without the need of a blood test. If you want to find out more or give them a try, head over to bionic.com, and you can use my exclusive referral code BQMikeThurston for a discount on your first order. Let's get back to the episode. I remember the first time that was wild for me is when I did the first mastermind.
Yeah, when he told me that, I was like, my man.
Yeah. I was like, 6 figures in 24 hours. I was like, the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, that's sick.
Wow. But, so it goes to show that, like, I mean, obviously I have a large audience, but I remember Will was giving me advice and he was like, oh, you should charge £8,000. I was like, fucking hell, that's a lot of money. Like, if people are going to want to pay that. And they did. And of course, like, it was worth it. I put a lot of effort into that weekend. Like, it was, you've just done a mastermind. You know how draining it is.
Like, dude, on the last day, no one knows this. last day, I was so exhausted. While one of the speakers went, I had to go have a nap. I went to the car, my G-Wagon, I put the seat back there. I had a nap for like half an hour and I was like, shook it off and came back into the room. I was exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't expect it. It's just giving everyone attention and you want one-to-ones and you've got to do the talks yourself. But the fact that you did the same, we're doing workouts all afternoon in the boardroom and then we're doing evening dinners and I was dead.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change it because it was an amazing experience, but I would prepare myself a lot better. Well,
that's the only reason why I did two last year. It's the reason why I'm like semi-reluctant to do it again, because I know it's gonna be a weekend that completely wipes me out. Of course, yeah, it's like financially lucrative and you get a lot out of it, but they also get a lot out of it. Like, it is for the guys that went to yours, the guys that went to mine, it's like, it's so inspiring. It's a life-changing event. You know, they go off on a completely different path, on the right path. But it's, it's intense. I remember for the Marbella one, like we finished up in Playa Padre. Like, that was the last event. But I'd promised everyone like one-to-one time, like at least 30 minutes one-to-one time. And I was like, fuck, I just want to party. I was like, we haven't finished yet. So we're on the beach, Playa Padre, on the sunbed. And everybody was coming to me one by one. And I was just like,
I came down to see you then. Yeah.
Having a heart to heart with them for like, it was like 30 minutes each. And it was eight of them. And I was like,
picked the wrong spot to do it there. Yeah. Then again, like, you got to look at the value you're giving. How many years of brand building up until then? And for an £8,000 package, you've probably accelerated their journey, like taken a few years of whatever they want to be just by the value information you've given. So it is worth, you could charge more than that, in fact.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to a couple of mastermind stuff. I've been a guest speaker at a few. And there's so many interesting conversations. Like, some guys who are doing really well in their field, or they might just suggest something. And you're just like, I never even thought about it that way.
Mm.
And then you just go off and you just do that thing that's going to make you a load of money or save you a load of wasted time and energy.
I think that's what a lot of people, I mean, everyone's trying to sell something nowadays and it's everywhere, right? But if you do your research, investing in mentorships or masterminds, it's only there to accelerate the journey you're on, and people are so scared to invest because they just look at the cost, which is normal to most people. But once you realize, like, for example, for you, over a decade worth of information that you can cram in into that curriculum over that period of time, which is going to, you know, massively make someone grow. And like, again, it's about being able to put that into action and just taking the leap of faith.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't do that. They just stay in the same spot, doing the same shit, expecting different results.
Yeah. I think one of the things that have accelerated my career is just being around other successful people, without a doubt.
Oh, bro, for sure. Being here.
Yeah.
The conversations you have, the environment you put yourself in, And it's inspiring as fuck. Yeah. All of a sudden, you can be in Newcastle, a big fish in a little pond, yeah, and now you're here, and we're like skin. Like, I mean, there's always someone bigger and better than you.
Yeah.
And it's inspiring. And you should be inspired by that.
Yeah. Because you'd spend a lot of time in Marbella. You did a winter in Marbella, but you said you'd never do that again.
Oh, bro.
Because a lot of people ask me, they're like, oh, so what do you prefer? Do you prefer Dubai or do you prefer Spain? And obviously, they're two very different places, but I think business-wise, you've got to, it doesn't have to be Dubai, but I think being in a big city where there's a lot going on, it's going to help you.
Yeah, for sure. But the only reason I was there is because we know a lot of people there.
Mm.
So I was comfortable. And you got nice weather, the nice gyms. But like, from how the country works, like it's, you can't even barely get a taxi. Do you know what I mean? So it's not great to live in that aspect.
Everything's closed on Sunday.
Everything's closed. Like, everyone has siestas, like mental times. Yeah. Even when we went skiing to the Alps Pro, went down to reception from 11 till 2, they were off. And then from 5 till 7, they were off.
What's this?
They shut the curtains and locked the doors. I'm like, thank God we got there at like 10 a.m. to check in, because we would have been waiting around till like...
The hotel
just shut us off. I'm like, I went mad at reception. I was like, what is wrong with you guys? Why? He's like, we need a break too, you know? I'm like, I just had to hold my tongue. I don't know if it's because we live in Dubai, but everything's very fast and efficient. But yeah, I was so angry at that point. But Marbella, I wouldn't ever do a winter there again. Mm. I was really lonely at that point.
Yeah.
Because everyone was like, yeah, stay in winter. It's so fun. Like, we all link up and go for Sunday dinners together. No one does anything. Everyone had a girlfriend but me.
Yeah.
So I was just sat in my apartment, jacking off, you know, by myself, lonely. The weather was cold. Like, oh, man. Tough times. But, you know, again, character building.
You think you're here for a while now? You just moved into a new spot.
I fully moved here, yeah. Like, because I've been a resident for like 4 years, but I've only just, like, last September fully moved. And hats off to Emma for this. Like, she's fully made where I am at home. Like,
yeah, because it was unfurnished, that spot.
It's unfurnished, but like, even just coming here, being at the other spot, but like, sounds so like cliche, probably a little bit lame, but like, having a missus makes it home, and I've also got the dog now as well. I don't get me wrong, when I was single it was great, I could do what I want, but like, I'm in a good spot. I'm putting a bit of comfort weight, but as far as work and growth is concerned, it's a good spot to be in. Do you know what I mean?
It looks like you're focused at the moment.
Yeah, no, I am, for sure.
Yeah.
But
this is interesting. Do you think life is better in a relationship or when you're single? Like, in terms of enjoyment and career growth?
There is that saying now, you know, if you've got the right woman by your side, you're going to grow a hell of a lot more. And I can see why, because the amount of money and time that I've spent doing the dumbest things, flying to different countries and going out and meeting women, it's a lot of time, right? Yeah. And you could be focused elsewhere. Like, now I don't have to worry about that because I've got it at home. But then again, also, you have freedom to go wherever you want. You've got no ties. Mm-hmm. So it works in both ways. I mean, look at you.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a tricky one. This year will be a fun one, because I'm technically single now, so I can do anything, go anywhere.
But
the content can be more spicy.
All right, let's rewind.
Yeah.
5 years or like a bit more. Now you've got like passive income coming in whenever you want. You can afford to be able to do that. But if you are still on your growth path back in the day, would you say to being single or being in a relationship would be more effective? Because you don't have to worry about it as much now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because now you've got your cushion.
Yeah.
So you can have a day off, but when you didn't have to have a day off, when you couldn't have a day off, sorry, what would be more effective?
I think, again, it comes down to the person you're with.
You had some long-term relationships, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What was your longest?
The one I'm just at now, 2 years. But I tell you the one which worked out quite well. It was a long-distance one with a girl from Sweden. So this was during the YouTube growth phase. Now, because of this distance, what happened was she would be there. I'd be in London. I was like super loyal, had no interest in going out meeting anybody. So I locked myself away and just focused on work. And then I would see her maybe once or twice a month. And then it would realistically be a couple of days of doing no work, but it would be like nice relationship stuff. Then she would go back to Sweden and I would just do work every single day. So it kind of worked quite well, but it was, the balance was off a little bit because it was just like, I didn't go out at the weekend. I just stayed at home and I was like, this is so boring. I actually developed a weird relationship with food because I was just so bored of just being at home.
Weird relationship.
Like I wasn't getting any pleasure like anywhere in my life.
So you went full Kai Green.
Just like start getting loads of watermelons.
Got the watermelons out.
Just like eat. Like I was like, oh well, I'm not gonna go out tonight. It's Saturday, so I'll just watch a film and order Domino's and get cookies.
That's not real life though. That's just like an exaggerated booty call. They come for a few days and then you go home.
Yeah.
So you're getting all the good parts, I guess, and then they're clearing off.
Yeah.
But that,
it wasn't a normal relationship. It was a long distance relationship.
I had one of those. I know exactly what you mean. Mm. I had one in Norway.
Yeah.
Just nip over to Norway for the weekend and come back. Yeah. It was fun. It was great. But it was never going to last.
No.
I think my biggest fault with women was going for people internationals and then realizing I just need someone with the same culture. That was my biggest fault, I think. My love life has been, I could write a whole handbook on what not to do. For sure, bro. Like, my longest relationship was my first one when I was 19.
Mm.
And that was for like just under 2 years. And because I was 19, I was going to the gym, I was getting some attention. I cheated on her. It was the first girl I ever cheated on, the last as well. It was probably the best lesson I'd ever learned. And that, since then, I just had awful relationships. Like, you know, you know some of the ones I've been through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Very testing. Very testing.
I do wonder how you get yourself into some of these situations.
Because, do you know what it is? Because a lot of people will do this nowadays. Like, they'll go find someone on the internet and they'll see the look of them and they'll meet up with them and you see them for 3 months. By the time the honeymoon phase has worn off, you're in a relationship with them. And then it comes to month 4, 5, 6, then you realize you're not compatible and you hate the person.
Yeah.
Then it's just like, oh no, how do I get rid of them? Yeah. Like,
did you always find it difficult to end a relationship?
Yeah.
I know there was one that was difficult to end.
Oh God. I got to appreciate the consistency. Like, shoot. That would be what's funny. Cause like I'd be in, sometimes we split up and I used to look back and I was like, she did always like try and get me back, sometimes forcefully. And then I was like, I kind of appreciated the hustle. When points I was like maybe feeling a bit lonely, and I was always, I think about reaching back out, but it's that saying, never reach it back out or go back to something out of loneliness. That's such a true fact. Sorry, you just got me thinking about Lewis Harrison, of how he breaks up with girls. I remember he left his phone open, went to the shower.
Well, he left it open on purpose.
Yeah, and then went to the shower. And then he comes out and the girl he was seeing, not anymore, obviously, was looking at his phone. He went absolutely mental. It's like, what are you doing? Get the fuck out. Set her up. He like left messages out on his phone from other girls.
Fuck.
Savage, bro. Go on, Lou Dog.
Yeah, I think the compatibility part is the thing that stood out for me the most, because you can be seduced by their looks and the charm, the initial charm to begin with, but if there's things that you're clashing about early on, that's not worth it. Yeah. I'm so happy where I'm at now, 33, just because the sheer amount of experience that we've both had from dating, like the women we've met, the lessons we've learned, the mistakes we've made, like I know now what I like and what I don't like. And immediately I can tell if something's not going to work out. Literally, I could go on a first date or go for a coffee with someone and they might say something or do something and act in a certain way. I'm like, nah, I'm not getting involved with this one. Whereas before, when I was in my early 20s, I just wouldn't have picked up on it.
You'd have pursued it.
And then I would, like 6 months later, I would have been like, hang on a second. What the fuck's going on here?
Hang on a second. I hate you. Yeah.
This is the thing, like, I don't know if you can learn that.
No, you can't. It's because when you get older, you just become very selective about your time.
Mm.
You're like, you're literally wasting my time. Yeah. Get out. You're fired.
You could read all the books about dating, relationships, but nothing will substitute the experience you get from dating people.
I do agree with you, but I do collect, I have collected a lot of red flags.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's why I'm experienced, but I can wholeheartedly say, like, I got blown off my feet with Emma.
Mm.
And, like, it's such a cliche, and, like, lads can be lads and you can say what you want, but, like, I bumped into her and I'd pretty much given up at this point of looking for someone, and then that just happened.
Mm.
And now I'm where I am, so.
It is weird. Like, so many guys actually messaged me about them either being unhappy in a relationship, or they want to break up, or they've just broken up and they're in a bad place and they don't know what to do, and they're thinking like, oh, should I go back? Because that a lot of guys don't think that something better will come after that, and almost always something good or something better is going to come along. If you're not fired up after a breakup, particularly if you're the one that got dumped or you got cheated on, if you're not fired up after that, then there's no hope for you. Because I've been in situations before where I'd either been ghosted or I'd been cheated on or I'd been dumped. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna prove you wrong. Like, I am going to...
Who'd dump you as well? Idiots.
Well, I was in my mid-20s. I was different, put it that way. Yeah. Certainly didn't have the finances. I was still a kid. I want to compare myself to like when I was 25. I was not nowhere near smooth as I am now.
You're a cool cat now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Smooth.
It's easy now.
No, but that point is, if a breakup doesn't fire you up, you've got something wrong with you. It's some of the best things have come out of breakups and trauma.
Mm.
I think if you've used that energy correctly,
yeah, it will. You're gonna feel like shit, without a doubt, for a month.
Or breakups for a month.
Yeah, yeah. And then your life gets better. Then you might have another one, feel like shit, but then it gets better. Because I remember the worst breakup I had when I was 26. it was difficult because I didn't really have any friends in London. So I couldn't distract myself. I was like alone at home, and I was like, I tried to keep busy with work, and I'd lie in bed. And then when I went to bed, I couldn't stop thinking about her. I was like, God damn, like what? Like,
God damn.
Like, fuck, what the hell? Like, this is terrible. So then that forced me to just be like, right, I need to go out, I need to meet people. Because I was not talking to any girls, no girls. There was no conversations or anything with anyone, because I was like that into that person. So it's almost like I had to learn how to be single again and how to have the conversations and like reach out to people. And then that year, I think it was like 2018, I was just like, right, I'm going to travel. I'm just going to go. This is when I was like met up with Rob Lipsett for the first time, met up with like a load of other YouTubers and just started having fun. And it's like, oh, I can actually do this stuff now. And, you know, I'm single. I'm not going to upset anyone. And that was when life started getting like really, really good.
When you start to care less, but anyone looking at us both now, or anyone, any lad who you think is a cool cat now, they have all had their heart broken and they've probably like sobbed or got really upset over a woman.
I reckon Andrew Tate had a big one.
Yeah, of course, bro. It's happened to everyone. And that's probably why he's so successful at Alex the Bird. I mean, it's the best catalyst and trigger to put you on that trajectory.
It's a mad one. So you think you'll be with this one for a while?
Yeah. Yeah. I literally worship her, the ground she walks on.
That's like a big... you both look like genuinely happy as well, which is good.
Yeah, I'm fully open about, like, I've had past relationships where I wouldn't even want to post. I don't want to talk or like even introduce them to my friends. And then the other thing, you probably ask the question, why are you with her? I don't know. Like, why was I with her? But no, I'm in a really good spot with her. I can, you know, give her a little shout on here. But
do you ever argue?
Never. Just talk. Just cut it in at the bottom. We just talk. We have like disagreements like anyone, but like we just talk it out.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's good as well because she's quite young as well, relatively speaking. So she switched on for her age.
Yeah. She is. She's a lot more mature.
Just turned 15 last week. Didn't she?
Oh, God. You didn't even go above 16. You had to. Oh, yeah. Yeah. When she gets to 17, I'm going to bin her off. I'm going to fool Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah, so she's mature for her age. Oh dear.
What's the oldest age gap?
You mean?
Yeah.
When I was in Marbella, I think
same with me.
I was 23, and I think I slept with a woman who's 33. It was 10 years.
Yeah.
Which was the gap between me and Emma now. Go Em.
I think I got someone in the late 40s. You know.
No.
In Marbella. No.
Yeah. How did that happen?
She worked at that Casa de Habana.
Isn't that a brass house?
I don't know. As if I had money from brass back then.
Yeah. Brad Brassington used to go so often. Brad Brassington goes in the name, isn't he?
Was it with going out and drinking? You still do it, but you don't do it as much as you used to.
Yeah, I was drinking last night. But I'll happily go for, when I go for dinner, like you're good at this, you'll go for dinner, you'll have Coke Zero. When I go for dinner, I'm probably having a pint or a glass of wine.
And that leads into a couple more.
Yeah, I'll have a few more.
Well,
a few more after that. No, I can cop it off now. Because do you know what it is? I don't like to go to clubs. Unless we're going to a big event, you know, with all the boys, black coffee or something, I don't like to go out after dinner. So at dinner, like at 10, 11, it just stops and I go home and I sleep fine. It's never really affected me with my sleep or my work.
Yeah. My ideal situation now is go to an event that is like between 6 and 1 a.m.
and leave at 7.
And then... Mike
left at 7. He's done this actually.
I'm quite notorious for smoke bombing. It's I've got my own term now, smoke bomb, because I'll just disappear.
Yeah,
I know. Like it's either the moment when I've had my fun, either the social battery is drained, or I'm like, right, I'm out of here. Like I just want to go to bed. I won't say goodbye to everyone. I just go.
I've seen you in Marbella. Throw a shot of tequila over your shoulder when everyone else was doing them. I literally saw you in the corner of my eyes. I was doing it. I was like, what the fuck? You just don't care. Or don't care who's behind you either.
Yeah, I used to care. I didn't want to disappoint anyone.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a party pooper. So I'd be like, right, I'll get really fucked up with all you guys. Now I'm like, no, there's just far too much going on. Like, I've got to go. But there is... There's times every now and then where I'll send it. Like, I do appreciate a good send, but I have to have earned it.
I think my appreciation for a good morning outweighs an appreciation for a good night now.
Mm.
I love getting up in the morning and just getting at it, doing shit, rather than... Nothing good happens after 12.
No.
All bad decisions and great memories happen after 12. That's the other. I remember Chris Williams said he didn't. He's like, if you need to drink around your friends, you need better friends.
Yeah.
I can agree with the point, but also it depends where you're drinking. Like if you're drinking in like at a university in your front room, yes. But if you're going to good events and you're meeting great people and having good conversations, I would slightly disagree.
Yeah, like if I'm at an event or a club and like I really like the music, I'm fine. Like yeah, I actually genuinely enjoy it. But if this happened when I was in Japan as well, like went to a club, the music was trash. Like there wasn't really a vibe. And I was just like, what am I even doing here? Like that was just there to keep Sol happy.
Oh, yeah, you had to wingman him.
Yeah.
Was he well behaved?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got. We can't speak about that on this.
How can we not?
Shit. Yeah, you need to go to Japan. It's a cool place. There's actually. I want to go to a load of places that are not the mainstream places, that are funky little curious places that are cool to go to, but not everybody's gone there because they're put off by it in some way.
Not polluted with Brits.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why Japan was so good, because it's like they actually don't want to conform and make it easy for tourists to travel and live there.
Were they welcoming to you?
Not really. They were like, you could tell you were, they would treat you differently because you're a foreigner.
You like, look so different, yeah.
They like look after their own people. Put it that way.
Brits haven't got the best rep.
No. But I think they'd have that with all tourists.
Really?
Yeah. They just, Japanese people look after Japan. And it makes sense. It's like what Britain should be like that, UK. Like after the war, you know how everyone was like united and everyone was proud to be British. Like it was a thing, there was a British culture. And then now it's just like a mix of, like in London, it's just a mix of everything.
Everyone's trying to escape.
The government are just trying to please everyone from all cultures and religions, and they just want everyone together, trying to make everyone happy, and it's impossible to do.
I saw a poll the other day of like, if we went to war, would you fight for your country? And it was like under 5% Brits. They're like, nope.
It's fucking mess.
Everyone's just trying to leave.
Wow.
Which is so sad.
Wow.
Because it is like, growing up in that country, I loved it.
Yeah. I was saying this to someone else, like, growing up in the UK when we grew up was fun. It was a cool place.
Yeah.
And it almost like made who we are today. Like with the British, you know, sense of humor. It's like,
I think it's the best sense of humor. It's hilarious. Yeah.
But now it's, if you're growing up, you can't crack a joke without someone getting offended.
Yeah. I think. Yeah. I gotta be careful what you say on here. But like the whole world's just so sensitive now.
Mm.
And it's all based around mental health, isn't it? Everyone's got a problem.
Mm.
You know? And I think we came from a generation where mental health issues wasn't labelled, so when you felt a certain way, you just pull your socks up and get on with it.
Mm.
But now everyone's diagnosed with this, that, and the other, and then they try and brag about it almost.
Yeah.
Rather than dealing with the solution, you know? So like when we were younger, if we did have something wrong with us and you just got on with it, but now if you say that to someone else now, they would have a go at you saying you don't know what it's like.
Yeah.
Purely because they haven't dealt with it themselves. They're still like romanticizing with the problem. Like, just fucking get over it. Do you know what I mean?
They want sympathy and attention.
And because you've got on with it and got over it, oh, you don't know what it's like.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole world's like full of snowflakes.
Yeah. Would you ever go back?
For 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'll go back in summer. But the thing is, it's just like the sentimental values, you know? Like, your dad and your brother live there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you go back to see them. But life here is next to none. It's the best place to be.
Well, that's why I like it. No matter where I go, it's nice. It's nice to get out, and you need to get out of Dubai because you start to not like it or take it for granted. But then every time you come back from having a break, you're like,
love it.
Yeah. It's an extremely convenient, everything's so convenient.
Yeah. And it's small, actually. Yeah. It's not a big place at all.
Yeah.
Like, what's crazy?
There's like 3 million people there.
What's crazy is, like, I remember in the UK, I'd be like in Yorkshire, see my mum, and then I'd drive to London. That's like a 4, 5, sometimes 6 hour drive.
Mm.
And I'd happily do it in a heartbeat just to go down to London, right? But then my mind switched now. Driving to Abu Dhabi seems like a chore.
Yeah. It's like O'Neill.
Yeah. It's nuts.
Wow.
But no, I will go back to, not to live, no.
Wow.
There's two. Not until they sort the economy out.
Well,
or the weather. It's not going to happen, so
no. No, we're definitely sun lovers. What's on the cards for this year? Work, business, life?
Business is just... The goalpost always moves, I guess. You know, I'm just keep trying to expanding the business, building new systems with Macroactive. We're just trying to help as many coaches as possible. I really want to hit to like... gets like 5-10k mark with coaches that we help, and then working closely with Macroactive still. I think the end goal is they'll probably end up trying to buy us out for a fuck ton of dough. Cheers, Ken. Go on, put the bid in. He was at the F1 with me, and he was actually saying, he was like, in his New Zealand accent, he's saying, what if we bought you out, Joss? I was smashed. I was like, do it. Just do it. Yeah. So I think that's like one of the end goals. But even if we did do that, I'd just go again.
Yeah. You know? What? Do a similar thing or start up something different?
Yeah. I love helping people, bro. Even when it comes from like PTing, you know, when you change someone's life and they've got a wedding coming up and you like they've got into their suit or their wedding dress, like it feels awesome. It's exactly the same what we do now, but more on like a monetary status, helping people get off the gym floor to earn the first 10K, which seems like so... like far-fetched to these people, and it's awesome to see these guys.
Mm.
You know, we've got kids coming through the academy who are like 22 years old hitting their first 10k after working with us for 2 months, and like they ring me up and be like, Joss, I've just taken my girlfriend out, I didn't have to check my card afterwards or check my bank account, I've just done it, or I've booked a holiday. It's fucking awesome to do that. Mm. And the feeling I get off that, I just want to go again, whether it's in fitness or some sort of service-based business.
Who is the ideal candidate that you look for to work with? Literally anybody who's a coach.
It can be anyone, bro. Who? What I've learned with what we've done is, when we first started, I was massively gung ho on just sales, getting the numbers in. But now I'm very selective, actually, of who we take on. So, for example, we've had a lot of people with large followings thinking they're going to absolutely smash the back end out of the business when the demographic is not right, nor is their work ethic. You know, they're not consistent. They don't want to put in the work. Or they're not confident with what they do, so they don't believe in their product. So it can be for any type of coach if they are willing to implement what we tell them, essentially. Mm. It's just a system that needs to be worked, you know? If you're going to put the reps in, you'll get the results.
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't matter. Like, you don't have to have millions of followers or thousands of followers for that matter. We can make it work for you, yeah. Essentially.
Yeah, and I'll say, after working with you, I don't even remember what year that was, but it was good. The team are sick.
Yeah, it's got...
It was like, yeah, everything was just very smooth.
Have you... So this was probably one of the hardest things I've had to learn when you have your own business, is managing the team.
Mm.
There's no training in it. Mm. And knowing who to hire and then how to oversee everything was probably one of the most difficult things about building a business. Is that... Would you say that's one of the hardest things for you?
Yeah. Particularly when I'm the type of person I've always... being used to just working by myself. Now you've got people working for you, and then it's like, oh, so okay. Now you have to make sure they're doing what they should be doing.
Are you a control freak?
No. Oh, with my own stuff?
Yeah.
Used to be.
So, like, you know, when you give your first job away to someone, you're like...
Giving other people control of my socials, for example. Didn't mind as much on, like, TikTok, but say, for example... like one of my coaching pages, like maybe I would see something that, like a picture that I wouldn't post. I'm like, fucking hell, I'm fucking ugly here. Why you pick that picture? Or like
the chest's not big enough.
Yeah. But then it's ultimately you have to let them do their thing. And usually if they do fuck up or make a mistake, you just sit down and be like, yeah, that like we're not going to do it like that, or don't do that again. And then they don't do it ever again.
I think the lesson is, what a lot of people don't no one really has it figured out.
Yeah.
Everyone's winging it.
Yeah.
But you've just got to wing it multiple times to see what areas don't work and then go the other way.
Yeah.
And that's what I've learned with growing this agency. Like, we've got like 19 staff now, and it's so tough to manage everyone. And I think when I couldn't even imagine having 19 staff like a few years back.
Yeah. It's weird because sometimes it depends what you really want from your work. Like, I think back to a time when I was doing well, like really quite well financially, but I had the least amount of stress in my life. I think that was like 2019, when it was just me and Louis Armstrong. Like, he was my cameraman, he was filming, editing, and that was really all I needed, because I was kind of managing everything else myself, but it wasn't taking a huge amount of time. And we would just go travel around and just mess about, make videos. The app was running itself, and I had all like these collaborations with sponsors, doing shout outs on socials, and I was like cleaning up, but like I didn't have to manage anyone, and there was no stress. Like, my expenses were so low because I was just paying for Louis. That was it.
Everyone says that. If we could go back to like your first 10k months, there was no worries, and it was just like the perfect amount at that time to cover absolutely everything and some.
Yeah,
it was the best.
And it was just like no stress, loads of freedom. It was 2019 was a good time. Like, now it's just like, fuck. Like, if you want to continue to grow and you want more, you want to earn more, you can't do what you were doing to get that 10K. If you want to go to 10K to 100K, it's like, okay.
But who said it to me yesterday? He goes, this never ends, does it? I was like, no, it never ends, bro. Like, the goalpost keeps moving.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important to fall in love with the journey of what you're doing rather than actual what the goal is. Because when you're starting out and you want to hit your first 10K month, whatever it is, it's not going to feel as good when you first do it. You're like, oh, shit, we just go again. So you've got to love what you do, essentially.
Yeah. It's weird as well. It's like, I remember when I got my car for the first time here, that upgrade from like the Vauxhall Corsa to the Jags, like, holy shit. Like, I remember driving around just for the sake of driving around. And then it's like, well, you can upgrade again, but it's not gonna come anywhere near as close as when I first got the Jag.
I remember you did that video. You went on the farm to do it. Yeah.
God,
I was like, I need to up my game. Mike's fucking killing it. Shit, I can't remember what I was driving at the time. I think it was like an MG. Didn't make them anymore. I crashed the fuck out of that. Oh no. Row it right
now
off.
I've got people like Iman buying like their 10th supercar, and you're like, oh, all right, okay.
Yeah, man. Saw a video of him. He was at a beach club and he bought one like online while he was at a beach club. Sick.
Those fucking levels. But we're doing good. We're on the right path. We're fucking smashing it.
You can't complain, bro.
Yeah. So,